We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. All right, let's begin our lesson. And it turns out there's a little bit more to Teresa's giving away her authority story that I told during the guided meditation. A big opportunity came up for her. It's an opportunity to take all the interior work that she's been doing for years, all the growth work and all the healthy soul work, and begin to offer it to other people. It's an important opportunity. And sure enough, the stories kicked in. Oh, that's not for me. That's big. And big, that's for real authority figures. You know, people who do things like that, they get the right kind of certificates, they get the right kind of degrees, and if I did that, imposter, fraud. It wouldn't take long, people would see the ruse, disapprove, probably hate me. Oh well, her stories tell her, I guess I'm just going to have to leave. All of that learning, and all of that growing, and all of that experience, gonna have to leave it on the shelf and let some real authority figure do big things like that. Except, again, she was the one telling me the story, which means she was seeing her inner thought habits trying to derail her. She was seeing how her afflictive emotions were acting as her enemies. And while the process isn't tied up in a tidy bow yet, I mean, who knows if the thing will actually happen, but just her telling me that story, I know. Her days of giving away her inner authority, those days are numbered. We say it all the time, afflictive emotions are our friends. But when we say that, we're describing a possibility. We're not describing a certainty, not even a probability. You know how night anxiety, and you know how life-limiting fears, and you know how those feelings of being a poser or feelings of being inadequate, how those things will often act as our enemies. They'll drag us down, they'll limit our actions, they'll limit our lives. Afflictive emotions are only our friends when they trigger us to dig out what's going on inside. They're only our friends when they help us discover what our limiting stories are, when they help us discover the truth we heard Jesus say last week that isn't true enough. Well, we finish up this part of the lesson today with some practical tips, how we turn our afflictive emotions from enemies into friends. Now, under the heading Credit Where Credit Is Due, I distilled these from the Desert Father that we talked about last week. John Cashin was his name. So here we go. Practical tip number one. Inward first, outward second. Learning to let our uncomfortable trigger internal exploration first. That is really important. It's not uncommon to not notice an emotion until the circuit breaker emotion, anger, kicks in. We tend to ignore subtle emotions, often because we don't like them. I mean, who likes feeling clingy, or who likes feeling neglected or jealous or emasculated? So instead of seeing those, we tend to suppress them, or we distract ourselves, or we try to ignore, just get on with life. And when that doesn't work, which is pretty much all the time, we muster some ham-fisted attempt to fix things without actually knowing what's really going on. We feel bad, and then we react. We react by blaming somebody, withdrawing from somebody. We redouble our efforts on some strategy that hasn't been fixing the problem in the misguided belief that, well, now it's going to. And we end up pointing a lot of energy and a lot of focus outwardly. Bad feeling? Well, I scan the horizon out there. What is the cause? Who is the cause of my nebulous, unnamed, ununderstood bad feelings? And if you want afflictive emotions to remain your enemy, that'll do it. Just keep pointing focus and attention outwardly. Don't understand what's going on inside, and your afflictive emotions will remain your enemy. Don't explore the stories or the beliefs. And if we do that, when it's time to show up to actually do the external work that needs doing, we will be completely misinformed. We will not have a clue about what actual problem needs fixing. We will fixate on something, and that thing will have enough truth to it that we can say to ourselves, see, that's the problem. Out there, that's the problem, not in here. We will have found for ourselves our scapegoat. Stupid wife, stupid boss, stupid kids, stupid credit card company, stupid Republicans, stupid Democrats. External focus is another of those hardwired instincts that we talk about all the time. It's the default setting. We're not dumb because we default to the external. We evolved that way. But natural selection, brilliant in some contexts, killing us in others. So, practical tip number one, go inwardly first, externally second. Know your own thing under the thing, and then think about fixing the thing out there that often does need fixing. Well, you'll see in our guide to working the circle in October, I think the first Saturday in October, we'll do a self-awareness workshop. Actually, we'll do two of them in breakout groups at the same time. We'll learn practical groups to do this. We'll learn how to do inward first, outward second. One of the breakout groups will focus on the actual self-awareness process, what we call doing a worksheet. The other breakout group will be for those who've already done that first one, how to be a listener when somebody else is doing that. Check the schedule. Inward first, outward second. Practical tip number two. Talk about it with a spiritual friend. That's about as ancient wisdom gets. Hardwired into our humanity, we discern better. We find wisdom better together. We unearth the thing under the thing better when we do it together. Which, unfortunately, as Americans, is harder than it sounds. Because we are the inheritors of 500 years of Western individualism that has gone too far. Individualism is a truth that travels in tandem. The priority of the individual and the priority of the group. They're a yin-yang pair that define one another, and we need both. And when we prioritize one or when we prioritize the other too much, we suffer. And we Westerners, and Americans in particular, partly because of our geography, we've had this vast frontier, we have enshrined in our cultural norms going it alone. We have to make it on our own. We'd have to not ask for help because that would be weak. And we don't instinctively understand our need for interdependence. So we need some remedial help when it comes to authentic friendships, especially spiritual friendships, transparent, supporting one another friendships. So hey, we got a fall schedule. Maybe life story groups would be good for you. Now the spiritual tradition has always insisted on together. I've been talking a lot about the desert fathers and mothers lately. Well, when they left the Roman Empire, they went out to the desert to hammer out a spirituality. Together was the bedrock on which they built. Our worksheets are actually an updated version of their practice. Here's the Greek word, exagoresis. You do not even remember that. We've translated that word confession. But what modern ears hear when we hear that word, that's not exactly what the practice was. It was a practice of developing self-awareness and the capacity for self-awareness. And we do that by exploring our own souls with spiritual friends. Now, as in our American culture, we've given that role over to professionals. But here's what professionals have done for us. They have relearned and restitched and reconstituted the art of together. The art of what the desert fathers and mothers called spiritual friendship. But that is a role that functions best in spiritual community. We can together normalize exposing our shadow sides and not being afraid to do it. A shadow side, having one, is not weak. It's just human. You didn't have the option to not have one. So, in spiritual friendships, we normalize digging out our thing under the thing. And we do it safely. We do it without judgment. We do it without shame. The main gift that you give to me when you listen to me dig into my own soul, it's your gift of not being me. Well, I stumbled onto this principle way back when I was 22, and I have practiced it fiercely ever since. In that time, I've had lots of different people listen to me. And what I've learned is that their best gift to me, it's not their psycho-emotional brilliance. It's not their keen insight into the human condition. Now, some of the folks who were really good at helping me weren't all that brilliant. Their primary gift was not being me. Their primary gift was having a not-me brain to listen to me with. Their listening helped me ask myself the questions that helped me unearth my unseen stories. Well, in October, that second breakout group during our workshop, it'll focus on how powerful that gift of listening to one another really is. In the meantime, here's a book that we suggest all the time. It's called Time to Think by Nancy Klein. It's finally available on Kindle, only $6. It will be the best $6 you spend this year. So practical tip number one, inward first, outward second. Practical tip number two, talk it over with a spiritual friend. And practical tip number three, we explore our own freedom. Let me explain what that one means. When turning afflictive emotions from enemies to friends, what we're after is restoring the interior equilibrium that allows us to discern the inner voice, the voice that always speaks insight, but we don't hear, that always speaks wisdom and courage and strength and virtue, that always speaks expanded capacity, but the voice we so often miss because static in the lines, urgency caught up in the system, truths that are not true enough. What we're after is restoring access to the fruit of the Spirit that is in us, the divine breath we carry within. So, a good diagnostic question when we're exploring our afflictive emotions is freedom. Am I able, in this moment, to not react to this impulse? Or is this a compulsion over which I have no power? Do I have the freedom to back off of this thought chain, to not say these words that I've got all queued up and ready to go? Do I have the capacity to not do this action that I'm about to do? Or more often, it doesn't happen in the moment. It usually happens after the fact when we're looking back at some train wreck that we've just gone through. Did I have the freedom in that moment when I chose the train wreck? Was I free in that moment to choose? Was I able to see from some different angle than the one that I've got locked in that I always see from? Well, another of the Desert Fathers, Abbot Moses of Ethiopia, he taught us that it is not impossible for our minds to manage our thoughts. It is impossible for our minds to not be approached by thoughts. They're going to come. But we do have the capacity to either allow our thoughts to dominate or to siphon power off of them and to quiet them. And that siphoning off option, it is possible, but it's not easy. So while Abbot Moses didn't use the term, what he taught was, he taught us to work the circle so that we would be able to siphon off the power of those thoughts, their power to dominate us. And what did he say we needed to do? We needed to meditate. We needed to practice spiritual community. We needed to work the circle. So what we look for when we look for freedom is we look for an interior state of inner peace that is non-rushed, non-urgent, non-anxious, non-compulsed. We're looking for that state of interior equilibrium. Well, in that state, we can listen for the inner voice, and we can discern, and we can decide. So, practical tip number three, we learn to ask ourselves, which is, again, easier if we do it with a spiritual friend. We ask ourselves, just how free am I right now or then? Or just how compelled, how compulsed am I? Practical tip number four, we keep short tabs. The religion that I grew up in put a pretty heavy emphasis on something Paul taught from in his book to the Ephesus. You might have heard the quote, "Don't let the sun go down on your wrath." In other words, when some afflictive emotion is grinding and churning, don't let it stew for too long. Which is easy to understand if you heard the lesson from a couple of weeks ago. Thought habits become emotional response habits, and emotional response habits become word and deed habits, which become lifestyle habits, which become human destiny, our whole life habits. So, for example, self-pity kicks in. Maybe we're doing a little bit of wallowing. Or we're resenting. Or we feel exploited. Or we feel abandoned, maybe devalued, belittled perhaps. And those feelings are just churning away in there. And it is remarkable how creative our brains get under the influence of afflictive emotion chemicals. Yeah, that same thing, it happened then too. And it happened over here, and it happened over there. And it happened this way, and it happened that way. Yeah. Off to the races our brains go. But here's the thing. We actually have control of that chain of events early in the process. But after it's picked up steam and gone a few steps through, we kind of just have to wait it out. And a whole lot of damage can happen while we're waiting it out. But in truth, we never really do wait it out, because things might go quiet for a little while, but that story, it's still in there. It's just waiting for the next similar stimulus to evoke the next similar response. Only next time, it's going to be more locked into habit, and we're going to be even less free than we were this time. The longer we allow our afflictive emotions to stew, the more entrenched, the more habituated they become. And the road back, it just gets that much harder. Still possible, just harder. So we keep short tabs. And finally, tip number 5, we reconcile. Also pretty bedrock in our tradition. Jesus taught us that if we're doing something important, even something holy, like giving an offering, which religion will tell you very holy. So if you're there doing something important and holy, and while you're there, you remember a fractured relationship. Whatever you're doing, it is less important than going and fixing that relationship. Conflict is one of the best indicators we have that an afflictive emotion is our enemy, not our friend. It's a very good indicator that we have dug in on some truth that isn't true enough. So, by doing the work of reconciling, we have to dig into our stories. We have to unearth our insufficient truths. Reconciling and making amends and setting right what has gone wrong, it forces us to see what's going on inside of ourselves. Every time I talk about this, it evokes plenty of, yeah, but. Yeah, Doug, but you don't know how bad or how immoral or how heartless or how criminal my other is. So, Doug, really, this principle, it doesn't apply to me because evidence A and evidence B and evidence C, and sometimes that's true. There is right and wrong. There is harmful behavior. There is flat-out wickedness. So it's true. But it's also convenient. It's very easy to point toward external badness to justify not seeing our own internal narratives. So Paul told us in his letter to Rome, if it's at all possible, if there exists inside of you even a small possibility of changing your perspective, changing your approach, changing your blind spot, or seeing the hurt that made you blind in the first place, if that is in you, come on now. You can do this hard thing. Because if you do, there's gold. Yes, resolved is better than unresolved conflict. That's true. But if you become a seer of your own hidden things, which is necessary in order to resolve conflict, that is going to help you avoid, it's going to help you work through, it's going to help you head off in advance a whole lot of negative in your life and in our world. Well, in our fall schedule and in our winter schedule, after someone has done the workshop on doing a worksheet and the workshop on listening, then we invite them to be part of a conflict resolution cohort. Together, we learn the art of applying the principles of mutual self-awareness to actually resolving our conflicts. And that's a set of skills that scales up. We can definitely apply it to our interpersonal relationships, but we can also apply it to the big social issues of our day, the most important moral issues of our time. So, check out the schedule, self-awareness, be the listener, resolve conflict. Ancient practice and wisdom made accessible for our daily lives. So John Cashin, he had one more practical tip, and it has to do with how the learning quadrant also helps us turn afflictive emotions into friends, but I hit my word limit, so we'll cover that another way. But a quick plug, several folks in the community have started their own Zoom book clubs. They wanted to learn something significant, so they invited others to do it with them. Well, if you'd like to do that, but you don't know who to invite, Kate and Carol, they'll help you get it set up. Send a note through the Contact Us button. Talk about a book club that you'd like to do. So, turning our afflictive emotions from enemies to friends. Go inward first, outward second. Talk it over with a spiritual friend. Explore your interior freedom. Keep short tabs and reconcile. That's gold right there, people. That's some high quality stuff. Well, indwelling divine, may we continue becoming people that this inflection moment in history needs us to be. People who can show up to and help change the world as it's needed. To have the interior capacity to actually make those changes. So be that so as we follow Jesus. Amen. So if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings, which has come to mean the donate button on our website. And remember, if you get to keep your job during this crisis, spiritual community is a good investment. Well, if you're in the directory, you got Scott's finance report this week. It's also on our website. You can go there if you didn't get it in the email. Well, in the email, he thanked us. Our income has been slightly behind for several months, and in July, it was slightly ahead. Also, we spent less than budget, so Scott, cautiously optimistic. He also asks us to be consistent. He didn't say this, but I know when finances swing wildly from month to month, it makes him crazy. So consistency. But he also emphasized, if you're part of the community and you have a COVID-related financial stress, don't keep that to yourself. Let Scott know. Use the Contact Us button. Scott will get that email or that note. And he's gathered some folks who know about resources during this time. And he invited us to contribute to our In It Together fund, and helping one another is so much easier, he said, the earlier we start. So don't wait until there's an emergency. This is an important part of spiritual community, to help one another through our challenges. So Scott thanks us, and let's keep up the good work. All right, so what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your hearts? Gene, what are folks thinking about?
So I kind of started out as you were talking at the beginning, and you were talking about the first couple of steps, and I just wrote, inward's easy. I live in my head. But I tend to kind of stay in there, and getting that push to get out of it is the real challenge. It's that second step, go talk to somebody or get something external.
Yeah. Well, good. If inward is a natural instinct, step one.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. Thought ruts.
When we
go inwardly, we tend to go to the same territory we've been at again and again and again. I've actually, during quarantine, picked up the guitar and started playing again. The last time I played the guitar, I was, 17. Because when I was 15, I picked up the guitar and I learned 27 chords. And then after I'd learned those 27 chords, I played those 27 chords. And then after I played those 27 chords, I played them again and again and again and again until I was bored out of my mind and I dropped the guitar and I haven't picked it up since. And that's because our brains tend to think thoughts we have thought, tend to fall into habit patterns. And we do that around, I'm going to play these same stupid chords again and again and again. I'm not going to learn some new thing. I'm just going to be stuck here. And we do the same thing with thoughts that we've thought, or stories that we've told, or judgments that we've made of other people, or judgments that we've made of the planet, or how the world works, or how it functions. And those things get into that same interior routine. So if we only go inwardly, usually what we run into is the same crap that we just cycled through last time.
Yep.
So step two is we bump our thought world up against someone whose gift is their not-me-ness. Some brain that is not my brain, some routines that are not my routines, some thought habits that are not my thought habits. And that's the value of that exagoresis word that the desert fathers and mothers taught us about. We do this process together in that way. So, yeah, it's good that we go inwardly. We tend to think about that. But it's also good if we go outwardly, where we expose our inner habits to someone else, that they get bumped out of the habit realm. So, yeah,
so good. So Teresa then added, she says, freedom from automatic impulse of having thoughts and believing them. That, like, goes
exactly
right where you went.
Yes, and thank you for your story, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Rebecca says, I'm a 9. Trying to be free from the compulsion of my emotions often turns into just burying and ignoring them.
Mm-hmm.
Strong feelings have a purpose, but letting them exist without controlling us, that's hard.
Yeah, and if you I said earlier that we study the Enneagram, and when Rebecca says she's a 9, that's one of the personality types. It's not unlike what Myers-Briggs tells us about ourselves. And, you know, I've got people that I love dearly who are 9s, and they are the most gracious and kind and caring and fun people. Well, sometimes what they do is merge them, in order to be that kind, they merge themselves into the needs and the thoughts and the patterns of the other. Boy, what a gift that is. I mean, if everybody had just a little bit of that, the world would run so much more smoothly. But in the process of doing that, we sometimes don't pay attention to what's going on inside. And so we need these processes to help us see when that wonderful trait actually gets toxic, when it becomes damaging, when it becomes hurtful. So good for you, Rebecca.
So Christy Phillips says, my impulse is to attempt reconciliation before I do the interior work because it feels so bad when people are mad at me.
Yeah.
But I need to pause and do the work so I come from a place of love when I attempt that reconciliation.
Yep. So before I knew the Enneagram, I noticed this, that some of the most compassionate and caring people, some of the most caregiving, instincted people, can become very, very harsh and very, very hard. And the pattern that I begin to observe, now we have a language through the Enneagram that helps us understand this so much better. But the language that I used at the time was, when someone puts themselves out there and puts themselves out there and puts themselves out there and puts themselves out there, and they keep getting taken advantage of, and they keep getting stomped on, and they keep getting people that jump into their space and don't and do it without regard, when that happens again and again and again, they don't just erect what would be a picket fence for the soul, you know, a nice little demarcation line that says, here's the gate, you may come in, here's the gate, you must go out. No, they will erect a prison fence, you know, 14-foot walls with barbed wire on the top, and say, I'll be damned if I'm going to let you come in and do that damage again. And what I think Christy's getting at is the need to take care of that interior space and to guard it, but not do that on the basis of the hurt that we've sustained in the past. And again, here's a set of processes. I know Christy. I mean, she actually runs most of the organization that we do for our worksheet workshops, and she's really good at doing the workshops. And I know the work that she's done by this self-awareness has allowed her to find that balance between the defensive reactionary response and the going too far, giving too much response, and finding that beautiful place in between where our gift is a gift and our curse is covered over. Because every strength that we have is just the flip side of every weakness. Every gift that we have is just the flip side of the curse. And so how do we find that beautiful spot in between where we can cover our weaknesses and we can use our strengths? That's what all of this working the circle stuff is about. So thank you, Christy. One more?
Sure. So Michelle Carter says...
Hello, Michelle.
Says, having an enemy to rail against is a convenient way to avoid looking at our own stuff.
All right. That's a great point to end on. Repeat it. Say it one more time.
Having an enemy to rail against is an inconvenient way to avoid looking at our own stuff.
We need say no more. Thank you, Michelle. All right, if you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine, which means the fruit of the Spirit, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness, and courage and strength and capacity and wisdom. They're all within us if we but listen. Well, as we go into our week, let's extend your other hand to our city. Let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live with and work with, go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. Love one another as you go. Maybe text somebody that you saw in the scroll, and we'll see you again next week. And remember, there's no Zoom how you're thinking this week. See you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.